Hi everyone, welcome to STEP's audio channel. We are very excited to share our content from STEP's events to learn all about the latest trends in startups, digital media, fintech, future tech, and wellness in emerging markets. You can find us on Enerami, Spotify, and Apple Podcasts. Make sure to subscribe to your favorite channel, and we hope you enjoy the content.
Okay, we're going to talk about AI, plotting your path in this really wild market. How many of you use AI in your daily life? Raise your hands. Okay, over most of the people in the room, obviously, and how many of you are already integrating it into your businesses? Very few hands. I'd say about 10 hands. Okay, not that many folks. So let's take a look. All right, so I'm Jeremiah. I've been in Silicon Valley for 28 years. So the dot-com, Web 2, sharing economy, Web 3, and now the AI movement. And I've seen a wide range of things, and this one is, I think this is one of the biggest trends we've ever seen. If you were here yesterday, you might have heard my business partner, Chris Yeh, talk about blitzscaling. I'm one of the general partners. I run the AI fund, seed, series A, startups. We fund them. And our advisor is Reid Hoffman, NLP. So I run an event series in San Francisco called Llama Lounge. There's no real llamas at the event, but I'll tell you a funny story. I went to the Woodstock of AI, and 5,000 people showed up for this meetup, and it was only planned in 5 days. Wow. So I was at the Exploratorium, and somebody decided to bring 3 real llamas. And I said, wow, clearly this is really hot now, and everybody wants to build an AI in San Francisco. And I said, I need an event name, and I looked at that llama. It didn't spit on me, and I said, Llama Lounge. So my 8th event is next week in San Francisco, and 10 different AI startups are on the demo floor, and the theme for next week is AI agents, autonomous agents. We'll talk about that more in just a bit. And here's some of the examples of the high energy. People have their own demo stations. Different founders are presenting. And we've had, the last one was in University Avenue in Palo Alto. There was a line down the street. The last time there's been a line for a tech event in Palo Alto that large was the iPhone launch by Steve Jobs. The amount of energy for AI in San Francisco is incredible. Let me just give you some stats. The main freeway, which is Highway 101, 1/3 of the billboards are on AI. Every single tech giant in Silicon Valley is now shifted to be an AI company. Google, Apple, and of course our friends in Seattle, Microsoft and Amazon. Everybody's focused on AI. It's everywhere. Now here's the scale of the community. There are people flying in to San Francisco from all over the world, founders, to launch their AI startups. The VCs, 50% of the VCs are in San Francisco. There's a lot of bad news about San Francisco. Some of it's true. Some of it is politically motivated. So you can't really trust all of it, but the AI community is really growing. So here's an amazing stat. In San Francisco, there are 100 AI events in person per month. That's 3 to 5 events per day. And 2 on Saturday and 2 on Sunday, the weekend. There's 2 hackathons every single week. Each has 200 developers. Each. Like, that is more developers than folks in the room building things, building AI constantly. The foundational models are in San Francisco, OpenAI, Anthropic, Inflection, and Palo Alto, and they're releasing their APIs, and the developers in San Francisco are using those to integrate and quickly build. Some of the startups at the hackathons, this time last year in spring, they were integrating text-based AI models where you could talk to it and it would talk back with text. Now, in just under a year, they're integrating voice, vision capability. It can see the room and see who's in the room. So it's learning how to talk, see, hear, think. It's almost as if the developers are creating living, sentient creatures. From just talking like a little baby to going around and walking and connecting to robotics in just under a year. I've never seen this type of growth, let alone their self-driving cars throughout the city. It is just something incredible to see the level of innovation happening so quickly. All right, so let's talk about where we've been to where we're going to go. So let's talk about 20 years ago, .com. These were the winners that became trillion-dollar companies. The next phase, Web 2, these companies are now billion-dollar, trillion-dollar companies. Sharing economy, here's the next wave. Then Web 3, the market's now at $2 trillion. It's up from $1 trillion. At its height, it was $3 trillion. We're talking market cap only, not full valuations. A lot of that space has been rutted out. Oh, this is important to note. In San Francisco, the Web3 community is pretty much gone. Gone. I know it's very active in Dubai, Hong Kong, Singapore, but it's just not talked about. People really aren't integrating or innovating on Web3 in San Francisco. It's really died down very fast. So that might be an indicator of what could come to other markets. As you know, the US government has not been friendly to Web3 and crypto. So that's one of the main reasons why. Now, here we are. This is the next wave, which is the AI wave. And many of these companies are billion-dollar companies. So the valuation of OpenAI is $80 billion to $100 billion. They have had rapid growth. And here's some of the other players in the space. It is a fast-moving category of adoption. So Reid Hoffman, perhaps the greatest investor in tech and in AI, he invested in or built PayPal, Airbnb, Facebook, LinkedIn. He built LinkedIn, sold it to Microsoft. He's on the board of Microsoft. One of the first investors in OpenAI, now has Inflection AI. That's his lineage. Pretty amazing. He says that AI is the most important tech development of his lifetime because it builds on all the other waves of the internet. In fact, this graph right here tells you everything. That's the adoption rate of ChatGPT. Within 5 days, they had 1 million users, active users, versus other tech trends that I just showed you could take them years, if not a decade, to get that adoption. We've never seen this level of adoption. It's text-based, it's easy to use, clear productivity gains. You can save time immediately, and it's very obvious and easy on how to use it. There's no adoption barriers. You only need internet access. Now, AI is a consequential technology. Jobs will be lost, new jobs will be created, and every single job will be impacted. Yes, even the trades, even plumbers will be impacted by AI. Homeowners can use VR goggles and AI to fix the most basic things that they need. So we're definitely going to see every aspect of society change from AI. And Chris Yeh, who was speaking yesterday, said that this is akin, and I agree completely, to the Industrial Revolution, where we traded muscle power for mechanical power. And today, we're trading our brain power for computational power. And that's how big we need to think about this transformation. It is a significant change in how that we're going to see the economy, society, and everything. I mean, how many generations have there been for humans? Well, we don't exactly know. But there's been 100 billion estimated humans on the planet. There's around 8 billion right now. And by the way, being alive is the greatest flex of all because that means only 8% of humans are alive right now. So congrats to us. But this is the first generation where we will build a new species. Friends, that's what's happening. We're building a new species that could potentially be more intelligent than us. Have you heard of the term AGI, artificial general intelligence? Raise your hand if you have. Okay, not everybody's hand is up. So that's equivalent to human capability and thinking across a wide range of modalities. Right now, it already dominates us on most tests, college tests. It hasn't achieved more in creativity or connection or emotion. But I'm going to show you some things in just a sec, a live demo. Now, the thrust of my speech today is going to be on the AI tech stack. And this is going to help you to navigate this space. I have a background as a Forrester research industry analyst, and I launched my own research firms on tech trends in Silicon Valley. And now this will be an important map. At the very bottom layer is the data layer. And this is important. So if you work at, who here works at a large company? Okay, I see about five hands. Now this is an absolute opportunity for you. So the data layer is the most important layer. And right now there's the public data, there's proprietary data, and there's synthetic data, which AI creates. Those are three types, and you need to understand those because each of those are product opportunities. Now, OpenAI 3.5 was trained off most of the text-based data on the internet. Now, I have a pop quiz, and you guys are going to shout out the answer. Get ready. If you took all the text data that OpenAI trained off and you compressed it, how large of a file size do you think that would be? Just shout it out. How all the text-based data from OpenAI that it trained on off the internet, how large of a file size do you think that would be? 1 petabyte? Another one? 3 megabytes? Gigabytes? Okay. 3 megabytes? All right, what else? You guys are shy. The answer is, it's just 1 terabyte. It fits on your phone. The world's knowledge, text-based knowledge, can fit on your phone. It's really not that much. So the estimated data is that 80% of the world's data, by the way, that doesn't include the videos in YouTube, so text-based is actually a pretty limited sample set. But that's the culmination of human knowledge. That's actually pretty shocking. Well, here's the estimated stat. 80% of the world's data is behind a firewall. A corporate firewall, a government firewall, a military firewall. That's the business opportunity for AI startups. So if you can get a legal contract to get access to that data behind those firewalls, and you can train an AI in that, you have a unique opportunity that others do not. Because the startups that are dependent upon OpenAI and their API only are called GPT wrappers. Not hip-hop, by the way. But basically that they only can be useful as long as the API doesn't change. So it's not any defensive mode at all. All right, so we will also see, I'm expecting a new form of data called a proof of fact. Then we're starting to see elements of this where you will have citations that are verified, and maybe blockchain will play a role there. So the next layer up is the AI infrastructure. Did you see the earnings from NVIDIA today? Yeah, the graph is going just like up like that. So the chips. So right now, according to my data center friends, a server cluster with H100s from NVIDIA that you would need for computing is around $1.2 million. But you can't even get one because there's a backload order of around 7 months. So the chips are the most valuable technology and commodity on the planet. That is an important thing to note. So AI infrastructure also includes cloud computing, machine learning ops, data, hardware, security, and of course, energy. The next layer up is the AI foundational models. Now you should think of these as operating systems. This market is pretty much baked. It's very difficult to move into this market. You need $1 billion in capital in order to train a model correctly to get access to the chips, plus there's that wait period. So this market is pretty much done. Now, of course, we're seeing sovereign models emerge all around the globe, Japan, China. I met with the Falcon team from UAE on my trip here, and even France has Mistral. Now, I want to share something that is a little unfortunate, but even Mistral, Europe's pride and joy, their famous LLM, most of their investment dollars comes from Silicon Valley. It's mostly already owned by Silicon Valley. So you can see that these lines continue to come back, like where the capital of AI is absolutely in San Francisco. So if you're going to create an AI startup, it's important that you have a base of operations also in San Francisco to benefit from the energy that's happening. All right, so the next one is AI apps. This week, the website that tracks the number of apps, and of course, it's called theresanaiforthat.com. theresanaiforthat.com. There's 12,000 AI projects. 1,000 new projects are launching every month. It means during the course of my talk, a new startup is launched in the AI space. That's 30 startups launching per day. Wow, that's rapid growth. We haven't seen this level of growth ever before because the cost of launching an AI startup is around $5,000. You just need API access. You can use Butternut or Tome or others to generate the website on the fly. But what you don't have is access to the proprietary data. That's the key thing at the bottom. Okay, so finding exclusive data will be key in plotting your math. Now, the next, on AI apps, they're on every single category, consumer, enterprise, across every single region, every single, like for example, Falcon is the US-based one, and they also have another one that's trained off Arabic data. So that's really key that nobody else is going to have. The next one is autonomous agents. This is the emerging category. My next event, Llama Lounge, is focused on autonomous agents. Now, autonomous agents are, there's open source, there's closed. Basically, they function with little human interaction or oversight at all. They're basically like junior workers. They're like interns. They're like personal assistants. And they're usually focused on one task right now. But what they're doing is they are recording the click paths. For example, you can tell an AI agent to go book me a trip to San Francisco from Dubai, and it would log into your United or your Emirates account, figure out the flights that you already, it'll look through your emails to find out what do you want, connect to your credit card, it'll do all the click paths, and then text you, ready for review, and it'll show you everything, and you say yes, then it'll go and book it for you. That's what AI agents will do. They will, it's like a virtual assistant that will do that for you. And that's happening in sales, it's happening in marketing, it's happening in family management, it's happening in all these different categories that tasks, they'll be automated. Now, the companies that record this data, all these click paths, that is the precursor to AGI. You can see it's automating all of these things, and soon we'll all have our own workers. Like, I don't know about you, there's probably some billionaires in the room, I'm not one, but a billionaire has a personal assistant, a travel assistant, a personal coach, wellness coach, their own chef, their own cook, their own driver, their own security team. Now, everybody can have that full team to help you using AI agents. We all, every human on the planet that has internet access will have those, including tutors and teachers and a music teacher. We'll all have this incredible resource to help us in our daily lives. And humanity is going to change. This is an exciting time to be alive. So this is the AI tech stack. I saw a lot of cameras go up. I'll give you a chance to get all of these slides at the end. Now, let's talk about some examples. Who's heard of Perplexity? Okay, only for five hands. This is the Google search killer. Now, Google's been around for 25 years. Remember, they're on the first wave, the dot-com wave. Who'd ever thought that search could potentially be upended? Now, many people in the AI community in San Francisco, myself included, we do not use Google search anymore. What? Google's not dominant in their own hometown? It's true. We use perplexity.ai. You can try it right now. Go to the website, perplexity.ai. It's free. There's also an app. And you can search for anything just like Google search, but it's a very different experience. Let's take a look. So what are the top hotels in Dubai? I just took this screenshot. And it serves up these results. And it, I mean, I think seven-star hotel would probably be at the top. So the Burj Al Arab is there listed. And you can see all the listings. Now, unlike other tools, at the top, it shows the citations. Where did it get that data? So it's generating this, and it's using a technology called RAG, Retrieval Augmented Generation. So it's getting access to the live internet, and it can get real-time information as well. And then it inserts media and even a map on the right-hand side. Now, unlike Google search is actually a pretty poor experience because it'll give you 10 different links, then you got to go to each of those websites. Each of those websites are filled with ads. Those ads are going to follow you around. And you don't even know, like, when you're on the search screen, like, which one of these are real, which one of them are sponsored. There's ads throughout. It's kind of a disrespectful experience. So imagine, MP, you ask me, what are the top hotels in San Francisco? And I know the answer. But instead, I say, well, you got to talk to my sponsors first. That's pretty disrespectful. And so Perplexity is challenging Google by building a better search engine. And this is something that is really scaring Google. We haven't seen this level of disruption. All right, the next one we'll do is a live demo from Pi. Now, Pi is made by Inflection AI. Now, disclosure, I have a financial relationship with them because Pi is run by Reid Hoffman, who is our advisor. And it's the other co-founder is Mustafa Suleiman from Google DeepMind. Now, Pi is a free app. You can download it anytime. There will be an API, so if you're a developer, this is going to be critical. So let's turn it on. Now, I just want to warn you, it's a little bit slow. I'm using my international data plan. But when I'm in Silicon Valley, it's very active. Okay, this is going to be live. I don't know what's going to happen. Please don't be offended. Hey, Pi, in one sentence, tell me what you do.
I provide personalized human-like chat assistance to users, offering helpful information and engaging in conversations across a wide range of topics.
Hey, Pi, I'm just arriving to Dubai. What is the top hotel that I should probably visit?
Welcome to Dubai, Jeremiah. If you're looking for a top-notch hotel experience, I'd recommend checking out the Burj Al Arab. It's one of the most iconic and luxurious hotels in Dubai, known for its stunning architecture, world-class amenities, and exceptional service. It's located on a private island, and offers breathtaking views of the Arabian Gulf. While it may come with a higher price tag, it's definitely worth it if you're looking for a truly unforgettable experience.
Hey, Pi, I'm feeling really sad. My dog was hit by a self-driving car. What should I do?
Oh no, Jeremiah, that's absolutely heartbreaking. I'm so sorry to hear that. It's completely normal to feel overwhelmed with sadness and grief right now. Allow yourself some time to process these emotions. Talking about your dog and your memories together can be a helpful way to cope with your loss. If you need someone to listen, I'm here for you. And remember, you're not alone in this. Take it one step at a time and reach out to friends, family, or even a professional if you need additional support.
So that's live. That's Pi. The voice technology is the best in class. Notice that what did it do that's different than any other chat app? What'd you hear? I'm sorry. Emotional interaction. That's right. It is simulating empathy. I get more empathy from Pi than, honestly, some other people in my family. What else did it do? What? Filler words. Yeah, it said, yeah. And did you notice the vocal fry, which is indicative of Scarlett Johansson in the movie? Her. What else did it do? Advertising for the hotel. Yes, it did. Now, why did it choose that one? Where did that data come from? We don't really know. It's kind of a black box. And the other thing is, I turn it on. Did you notice? Did I click any buttons? No. It's a hands-free voice interaction. In fact, I've had a one-hour dialogue, two-way conversation with Pi. It engages in dialogue, and it said, do you want to talk about your sadness? Any time of the day, if I'm feeling sad or happy, I can have these discussions. It's like a therapist. It's like an assistant. All of the things that I was talking about in the last slide, we're already seeing these things emerge. Now, say it again louder. Yes, that is true. There's a very large learning machine. So that is its own foundational model. Inflection AI, the creator of Pi, is from the Google DeepMind team. They're based in Palo Alto. They recently received investment from Microsoft, Bill Gates, Eric Schmidt, and NVIDIA. And part of the deal is NVIDIA has provided them with 22,000 H100 chips. It's one of the, and they have not started marketing. So who's heard of Pi or Inflection before? About six hands. So you're going to start hearing about this as one of the key foundational models, but I'm telling you here first that it's coming. Now, if you're an AI founder or developer, there will be an API. So the expectation is that every single consumer app, your media, your music, your food ordering, your car ordering, all of the apps or email will be connected to Pi, and that'll be the way you interface with it. You'll have your own personal assistant. All right. Now, Bill Gates, of course, he backed this. He says that AI could kill Google Search and Amazon as we know them. The last two examples I showed you, Perplexity, better search than Google, and then I showed you this personal assistant. Eventually, Pi can do shopping for you. Hey, Pi, order dinner for my family tonight. Yes, I know what you guys like. Here's what I think. This restaurant has it. Do you want this? And it'll go do it for you. You don't have to use the app anymore. If you have your own AI assistant, you don't need apps. If you have your own AI assistant, you don't need to visit websites. Do you see how big this is? All right, so Bill Gates says, this technology will be so profound, it could radically alter users' behaviors. Whoever wins the personal agent, that's the big thing, because you never go to a search site again, you never go to a productivity site again, and you'll never go to Amazon again. I think he's been waiting to say that for 20 years. All right, so here's the insights, then I'll summarize things. AI is going to transform the way that we make every decision. This is very disruptive. All right, so here's the traditional decision funnel. There's awareness, engagement, consideration, and purchase. Now today, we're using Google, we're exposed to ads, we go to a website, we compare the products, we personally have to compare it, and then we conduct the commerce. You gotta log in, find your login password, then you gotta put your credit card, choose your mailing address, you gotta verify identity. It's a real hassle. And that's not a great user experience for anyone. In the near future, and I think it's happening now, is you will ask AI for recommendations. Which hotel do I need to go to? The humans will ask the AI to help book these things and then compare the products for us. And then e-commerce will happen within the AI app. I think that will happen by the end of this year. That's right. By the end of this year, OpenAI and Pi will have e-commerce built into it. Get ready. That's a huge change. In the midterm, and I think this is just 24 months away, AI will educate you. And by the way, when I'm with Pi, I leave the mic on for hours. It's just listening to my conversations. And soon, OpenAI will connect to all of your emails and read all of your conversations and chats with your approval. The benefit is I get this. It'll start to say, hey, Jeremiah, I think you're going to plan a trip to Dubai. You might need to think about this, this, and this. It'll start doing these things proactively, and it'll analyze my needs, and then it will shop for me, and eventually it'll just book the things that I need on my behalf. It'll proactively change the way that we're doing things in our lives. And all of these together, this means we're going to go from manual to hybrid to an automated life. This is going to impact all of us. Now, to summarize, five key points, then we're going to have Q&A, and Paul is going to bring the mic around. Number one, AI is the most consequential technology that we've ever seen. It's like the fire or splitting the atom. It can be used for bad and harm, but it also can be used to clothe, feed, and power the world. And this is an exciting time that our generation gets to build a new species. Number two, it is a complex ecosystem, so use the AI tech stack that I walked you through to find your business opportunities on where to deploy your startup or how to lead your big corporation. Number three, the power shift is real. We're going to start relying on AI for our decision-making, and that means that e-commerce, logistics, everything that we know is about to completely change. This is a significant commercial and economic change. Now, there's lots of opportunities for startups. If you're a startup, try to find exclusive data that nobody else has, or monetize synthetic data. That's a unique thing that nobody else should have. This is key for you. And make sure you follow the blitz scaling methods, network effects, viral effects. And if you're a big company, also, you can use these things as well. You can find productivity gains, start by integrating co-pilots, and start investing in autonomous agents. The autonomous agents are the stepstone to AGI. So you got to follow that co-pilot, agent, AGI. That's the path to think about in your roadmaps. So I wanted to thank you. Now, you probably want these slides. What you can do is send me a DM on LinkedIn when you click this QR code. Let's be honest, it doesn't work all the time. It goes to my LinkedIn profile. Send me a DM, slides. That's it. That's all you got to say. And I'll send you a link to my slides for today so we can stay in touch. I'm so grateful for your time. And I would love to invite Paul to come up here and let's have a dialogue.
No. Hey, come on. Give him a big round of applause. Come on. We will open the floor, actually. I'll be coming around. Please do not shout. I'm going to have the microphone. One thing you mentioned, actually, in my advisory career, I was just talking about this a week ago. It's very interesting. You just said, especially for commerce, you said, oh, I'm planning a trip to Dubai. Well, right now, you might choose an airline. I work with airlines, a lot of them. If you just say that, which airline is you going to choose? You know, so that changes the game into how an airline, a hotel, will advertise to you, because us, we might have our points and everything, so it might choose the default that we've been using. But if you're someone younger, actually, who's going to know which airline? It doesn't matter anymore.
That's right. And it also means that if you're a marketer, an airline marketer in this case, you have to market to to Paul's AI agent.
Exactly.
You don't market to Paul anymore. You market to his AI.
Whoa.
So it's really changing the way we think about advertising. Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, opening the floor, I'm going to come down, leave this microphone on so I can keep talking.
All right, get your hands up.
Please, I'm going to, Jeremiah, you choose the people that.
We'll start on this side of the room, then we'll make our way over.
Okay.
So I see some, there's one, two, three,
I'll come
four,
to you.
Five.
I'll come, since you're in front. And
this is the last session, so we can stay here and do questions for a bit.
Go ahead.
Hello, thank you for coming. I have a question, like, how do you evaluate AI apps? So I'm a Perplexity subscriber. I'm not very happy with the experience, but how do you evaluate Perplexity? They don't have their own foundation model. They don't have proprietary data. So why do you think they are going to be a winner? And normally, how do you evaluate AI apps?
Okay, so there's two questions there. So Perplexity, so if you don't know Perplexity, it's based off GPT 3.5 Turbo, and they have their own version of Llama. And they are connecting to Bing to get their data. So it is kind of a middleware. It is an AI app. It is not a foundational model. Right now, their valuation is at 500, I think, 500M. They have adoption. They have some professional premium accounts. So they're already starting to generate a little bit of revenue. So in this case, if we were evaluating it, you look at user growth and the chance for them to disrupt. And you think about, what is the exit? If they cause too much pain for Google, they're going to get acquired. They already took investment from Jeff Bezos, so they might. So one route I could see them generating significant revenue is affiliate sales to Amazon. So we should assume their cloud computing costs are going to be very small in comparison, because they have AWS now. So they're not going to go to Microsoft because they have competitive search. So let's see. Perplexity could be acquired by Google, of course, because they're going to be so sick of them. Amazon fully, or maybe Apple or Meta. So those are the exits. So those are some things I would think about in evaluating the value and the growth rate. Now, when it comes to evaluating most AI seed companies, which are around two founders, usually a team of two, maybe a couple engineers, about four folks. This is San Francisco data, where most of the startups are. They're currently raising 3 to 5 million for the seed stage, and they're valued at about 15 to 25 million. If they're from a Y Combinator, then they're probably valued at their upper edge right now. They have some user adoption, generating small amounts of revenue. So that's what we're seeing as a base right now for valuation. Hope that helps. I gave you a lot of data. Okay, back there.
Thank you, Jeremy. Just a quick question. How do we compete with San Francisco? It seems like all the foundation models are based in startups out of San Francisco, and the rest of the world is left out. And I think that's an unfair advantage. Especially that they have access to all of these GPUs with NVIDIA. How does the rest of the world compete when it comes to AI?
My honest answer is, and I know where I'm standing, and I'm friends with Ray Dargham for over a decade, is I think that if you're an AI founder, you do need to spend time in San Francisco. You do need to come out for 1 or 2 weeks, quickly make those connections, understand how the scene is working, figure out how to get access to all the key APIs and developer frameworks into the hackathons, and then you can come back and grow. I think that's fine. I think you need to spend time in San Francisco. I think that's critical, because the network effects and the speed at which the startups are doing is key. Now, if you're here in Dubai, how many AI hackathons have there been? One?
We've done five so far.
Five? Great. So you should do 50. Because that's the only way to innovate is to have over 2 days, grab the latest APIs. You know, right now, so the hackathons in SF are AI plus Apple Vision Pro. That's already happening. Like it's happening so fast. Every time there's a new release of an API from any foundational model or app, spin up a hackathon immediately, like within that week, immediately, and just invite come build immediately. That's how the hackathons are rolling out in SF. We don't know when the announcements were gonna come, but once the announcement comes, people say, all weekend, we're gonna build. We don't know what we're gonna build, but some sponsor is gonna put up money, just gonna do it. That's the speed at which it's happening. Great job, by the way. Next.
Yes, Arto from Haltia AI, one of the AI startups in Dubai. And I do have an Apple Vision Pro, thanks for asking.
Excellent.
I would just like to query, why do you believe that the future of personal AI assistants is cloud-based? For example, this demo of yours, it would have been far better with an on-device model.
You're absolutely right. So the trend that we're seeing is twofold tied to that. One, we're seeing small language models as the next trend. The large language model categories already baked. There's around 40 players. There's 10 dominant ones. So the next trend is small language models. In addition, what we're seeing is edge AI or device AI, where at nighttime, the LLM will be on your phone and it will use RAG connecting to all your email and your social, and it will train at night. And in the morning, you have a super snappy, responsive AI throughout the day. Remember that the wait time, the latency was almost like 5 seconds. That's way too long. But again, in San Francisco, where the servers and closer everything is, and it was a lot faster. So you are right. Small language models and device level AI is what we're seeing as a trend. Thank you. Next.
Come on over there.
And I should have made that point in my AI tech stack. You are absolutely right.
Hey, Jeremiah, great talk.
Thank
I'm actually visiting from San Francisco, so I know exactly what you mean by all those hackathons. So,
yeah, so you know the vibe.
Yes.
It's hard to explain, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
So a question I have is, how do you see privacy and users' desire to keep their emails from being scraped and stuff playing into the whole, the agent movement picking up, right?
How many of you have read the terms and service of your email provider? Wow, like two hands. Like when you raise your hand like that, we know you're not a liar because like you really read it then. So how many of you didn't read it? How many of you know there were actually terms of service? They already have access. So Google, Yahoo's already integrated GPT. Google's building Gemini's. It's already, Microsoft is integrating Copilot based on OpenAI. So it's already happening. Now, of course, they're going to have disclosures. Can you access these things? And you should trust that that happens. Now, the bigger question is, what's the business model? And I think the best business model will be a premium where you pay for your AI so you know the business model is aligned with you. The challenge is in emerging markets where people can't afford that, they're stuck with an advertising base or data sales. And that's not great for emerging markets. So that's a great question. So we're going to trade privacy for AI convenience. How far do you want to go? It depends on, up to you. Yes, this is fun. Thank you for all these questions.
Amazing session. My question is very similar. What about the safety on the personal data, not just the email or text base or anything? Like you are interacting with the Pi, the way you are sharing your personalized things and all. How do you make sure those are secure and not going to turn around?
This is a similar question to the last one, thank you, on safety. So as far as I know, these AI apps are not encrypted or secured. It would slow things down. So that's not happening yet. But eventually I'm expecting to see a very secure version. Yes, there's been some startups that are claimed to be very secure LLMs. But in the end, your data can still be sniffed by your government and your Wi-Fi router and your IP and anybody who's providing you a pipe. So you still have many points of weakness out there. And so the entire tech stack, remember that whole thing I showed you? There is data privacy issues on every stack. So I don't know how any individual is going to be able to manage that. So this is why the EU is putting forth some pretty sensible regulations in order to protect civilians and citizens. Thank you. Right? Say it again, Paul. Do
I said the EU always known for regulation. This gentleman, here you go.
So, gentlemen, thank you for your presentation.
Yes.
I'm building an AI analytics platform in travel industry, and I have a question on ethical AI. So I'm following a product called AI Pin, which has a trust mark, which there's a light which says that it's listening to you, and you have a power to switch it off. And this is what we see on listening devices, like even Pi. Would that have the power for a customer to switch it off so that it does not listen, or it has automatically always listening?
Yeah, so it's opt-in to turn the microphone on. And Paul, there's a question right here from MP.
I know.
Okay, right now it's all opt-in when the microphone can be turned on, and that is a standard operating procedure right now. But out in public, there's cameras everywhere and everything's listening, so.
Isn't your Echo listening to you as well?
Yeah, I mean, and actually your iPhone is technically, quote, listening. Do you say Siri? So it's passive listening already. So, I mean, how many microphones do you have? You have a watch, you have a phone on, you got a laptop, do you have a tablet at home? Do you have a smart speaker? Do you have a TV, smart TV? Do you have your phone, and you have your car, both cars, the Uber car you went in. Just today, coming here, you are already exposed to 10 mics within just 10 feet of you. There's a microphone right here too. Okay, MP.
Jeremiah, this morning I automated 30 minutes of work in 3 minutes of ChatGPT.
Nice.
But then I tried to automate my questions to you, and I didn't like what it came. So I really believed in the combination of the human brain with the technology. I didn't like the output now. I thought my brain could think of a better question.
We know you can.
Yes. So my question is, and chiming in from some of the points, there's a lot of excitement for the technology, but there's a lot of concern. And I think we went through a bit of this transition with Google. For example, when we started searching in Google 20 years ago, we could trust that whatever was there was coming from without a bias, was just coming from the computer to us. So you would ask something, it would give the information that it had. Then we started with the sponsored links. And in the beginning, the sponsored links were all hidden. Right? They were not transparent.
You're right.
And then I think EU started becoming more rigid, strict with regulation on transparency. Right now we saw Pi giving you Burj Al Arab recommendation, which of course it's a top hotel here, so it's a no-brainer when you ask for the top hotel. But what about the transparency when those things become mainstream, and will us as users know what we're being fed?
It's right now, it's a translucent box. So remember in the Perplexity example I gave, the citations were at the top. So that's kind of an example of the AI SEO on how it's doing that. But when it came to Pi, we don't know why or how it got that. What did it train on? We just don't know. And these foundational models don't really want to expose how they did that, because there's lawsuit liability on where they got that data. So it's not really clear. In the future, some amazing AIs, you can say, well, why did you come up with that recommendation? If it's a premium model, then hopefully it'll tell us where it got that. Maybe it'll be a social data reference or looking at your past behavior. So that's cloudy for us in the future. Thank you.
Maybe two or three more. So one here and two or three more afterwards over here. Right.
Yeah. Real quick, give me a wave and a smile, everybody. Thank you. All right.
You mentioned you met the Falcon team. Do you mind sharing what you think of the Falcon model or the AI ecosystem in the region?
Sure. I was impressed with the team, and they clearly have government backing, so that's amazing. So there's a trend right now for sovereign LLMs around the world, and so that's a fantastic thing. And ensuring that it's training on the unique culture of this region is key, because if it's trained off Western data, that's not going to be representative of the people here. So clearly the startups need to be working with your regional LLM,
that's
but also connecting to other ones. So for example, Perplexity, mid-layer app, it's connected into multiple foundational models. And so that's going to be critical for you to provide the best experience for the people in your market. So I didn't meet everybody in the team. I met the head of BizDev, came to one of the events that actually MP put together. It was a pretty short engagement, and I like what they're doing. I want to know more. Cool.
Hi. This is a question from an investor perspective. So
sure.
You say San Francisco is where everything is happening. Everybody needs to be there. The challenge for a MENA investor or a MENA-based investor would be, how do I tap into these startups? How can I be attractive to startups that are doing next-gen applications of this technology that are based in the Bay Area or anywhere else? Does that mean that everybody else outside is going to be left out from the potential return and exponential growth of this industry? In a nutshell, will you guys make much more money than us just because of where you're based?
Can't say who's going to make more money, and legally I can't do that. But the growth is just exponential. So so there's VCs flying in. So VCs are around the world are coming here to get capital as LPs, and then many of them have groups set up. I run a VC group. I run VC events, and over 80% of the people are not from San Francisco or even Americans. It's a global community. San Francisco has a tremendous amount of expats that are coming there and setting up shop. It is normal for VCs to fly in. So I also recommend that VCs in this region spend time in San Francisco. You know, just as if you're going to invest in fintech for MENA, then you need to know what's happening in New York. You're going to invest in media for MENA, you need to spend time in LA. So it's just part of the route in which one needs to do. So I'd recommend that. I really do think that the startups in SF, we already see it, the growth rates of them are just far beyond any other region because it's so concentrated and the network effects and the information sharing is just faster. And I think the biggest thing is this. In San Francisco, I'm just speaking broadly, it's okay to fail. It's totally okay to fuck up. You'll get funded again. It's okay to fail. You're encouraged to fail. What did you learn from that failure? Okay, move on. Try it again. That's okay. And in many cultures, I'm mainly looking at Europe, that's a no-go. You can't do that in Europe. Your family name is now not great. So I think that culture of allowing failure is going to be the critical thing. Great.
Exactly. That's why I've always been successful, right?
Always be successful. Not everybody is.
Hey, Jeremiah.
Hi.
Very enriching session.
Thank you.
Just wanted to comment on the regulation aspect, right? So regulation can be a bit of a tailwind if you see that regulation per se brings in safety to the technology, right?
Yes.
But it could be also a headwind. Because regulation, safety, standards, quality, a lot of capex, a lot of operational costs. So profitability, valuations, I mean, that's always a thin line. So what's your comments on that?
So this is a different trend. Remember .com, Web 2, sharing economy, Web 3? In all four of those trends, the tech leaders, the CEOs, did not lean into regulation. They waited until they got slapped. Look at Web 3. Like, they did not want to be, or they couldn't get regulated, and many of them are in jail now, right? So that was a mistake. Now, the AI industry has learned something different. The CEOs, like Sam Altman and Mustafa, are actively going to the White House. Sam Altman has toured MENA and Europe and Asia, trying to meet with the leaders because they want to lead regulation. And we've never seen that before. We have never seen Silicon Valley want to be regulated at this proactive rate. And they want to go in and they want to advise and teach and make people feel not as scared, and then also to shape the policy, obviously. And since these well-funded foundational models can do that, once they get in and change the law, they pull the ladder up so the startups can't compete. That's true. So they are going into the castle, trying to put up their banner, and then close the moat. So that is also why they know that as a proactive strategy to do that. So that's also happening. All right, we have time for maybe one last one.
Yeah, one last one. Who wants it? Do you have some? It's not you're bored like me. It's not I dislike you. It's because I have won some gender.
That's why I let Paul choose, so I don't get in trouble.
If she's brief, I'll allow you as well.
Thank you. Thank you for the presentation. And I wanted to ask you, the models, that the information, the data that the models are trained on,
yeah.
Currently, from the experience that I have had with all kind of different systems, is that the reply that they give usually are very much driven to the companies which have a very big informational pool, right? They have very big data out there.
Yes, true.
Which eventually leads us to the situation that for the small companies or medium-sized companies, it's getting more and more harder to compete in the space of AI. So I just want to hear your feedback around that. How
sure.
do small companies are going to be able to compete with monsters out there?
Just to make sure I understand, so big companies have produced a lot of content, media companies, therefore it's being more likely to be indexed by AI and therefore higher search results in the generation.
Absolutely.
Yes. Hey, the good news is you can fight fire with fire now. Every single small startup can pump out a ton of content with AI. So there, it's solved. That is the solution, is use AI to generate a lot of content. Just a side note on that, we'll get to the last question, is for marketers in the room, I'm assuming you're in that field, yeah. It's not just about producing a lot of content. So I met with the CMO of Pfizer, the world's largest pharmaceutical company, and he said that 10% of the content produced by their marketing team is AI generated. That's a lot of content. And the main opportunity is that each person in this room can now get personalized content at scale. That's where this is headed. It's not just pumping out a lot of content. Every single person in the CRM can have a personalized experience. What that means is in the future that when you arrive to the Pfizer website and it knows who you are, it'll generate for you your own version of the website. That will happen in the future. All right, last question. Hope it's a good one.
Hey, good talk. Thank you. After a tough day of entrepreneurship, does your AI give you a hug?
That is a great last question. No. Nothing replaces the love and affection from the people that you love and trust. And with that, I want you to turn to somebody you don't know and give them a high five, and we're going to end on that.
Thank you for tuning in. We hope you enjoyed the episode. You can find our content on Anghami, Spotify, and Apple Podcasts. Follow us on social media at Step Conference and let's stay in touch.